Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. Let me introduce the crew, guys. If you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back, Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and he's in Colorado currently. The statute of limitations in the other parts of the country have not worn off yet, so we appreciate you being back on the show, Doctor. Also, Chief Ralph Ornelas, formerly L.A. County Sheriff's Office, and then he became a police chief. He wanted to wear both hats, apparently, and so he's still in California, and we love him for that, so thanks for being on the show. Shout-out to our sponsors, guys. You know, our title sponsor is Gulls at Gulls.com. We have Comply Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them, we got on satellite radio back on May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo. AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.life, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And yes, thanks to them, we're streaming over a million people right now during this live show on social media. And we've got TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Please check out that store. And FishOrlandoBass.com. Zach has got a bass fishing charter, and where else but Orlando. So now, dudes, you have options. You're taking the wife and the kids or the grandkids to Disney. Give them a credit card, give them some cash, drop them off. I guess for the prices now, make that a credit card, because, you know, who's got enough cash to handle Disney, right? Let them go have a great time, hook up with Zach, do the bass fishing charter, or if you're feeling very adventurous, do the Florida alligator hunting where you catch and relocate Florida alligators. It's an incredible, I think Chief Schultz still has that scar on his hand from his last encounter. It's bragging rights, though. So check that out. Hey, a shout out to the guys that help us get all this content and distribute it over the internet. You know, we've got Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaFE.com, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Sheets with LawOfficer.com. So thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Here's what we have lined up, guys. We have dozens of Patterson and Newark cops. They have to retake the 2019 sergeant's exam. There are people that are not happy about this. Let me tell you, I would not be happy about this. And 2019, they took that test, what, at least 6 years ago. So wait to hear that story. Then we got a machete-wielding suspect fatally shot by Oklahoma City police officers after failed less lethal attempts. And then we got a man fatally shot by Seattle police officers when he pointed a gun at officers. And then we have more than 130 Philadelphia police drug cases are being vacated after a judge finds three officers' testimonies unreliable. And that figure could jump up to close to 1,000 cases. And then we got a wrongful death lawsuit filed against the Fort Wayne Police Department after the fatal shooting of a woman who had two knives. And then if we have time to get to it, Waterbury detective justified in returning fire after being shot by a carjacking suspect. So those are the stories. If you guys are ready, let's go in and jump into the first one. It's PIX11.com is the source. Dozens of Patterson and Newark cops must retake a 2019 sergeant's exam. I'm sorry I'm smiling, but I can only imagine the stress level for these guys. I mean, I've taken sergeant's exams before. I know the prep and the time involved in this stuff. And when you meld that with the reason, the rationale for doing this, I'll let you guys be the judge. More than 100 police officers across Newark and Patterson received news that they could shake up their lives as the New Jersey Civil Service Commission. They made a ruling that anyone who took a sergeant's exam 6 years ago must retake it, and if they fail, that they will be demoted back to entry-level ranks. Now, think about this. 6 years ago, there's one guy they're going to interview who's now a lieutenant, and think about how drastically this could affect people. And so here's a Patterson police lieutenant and a union president. His name is Chris Benevento. He said, hey, if they are demoted, their lives could be thrown into complete disarray. And then the state nullified the results of the 2019 sergeant's exam that was taken by both Newark and Patterson cops after the state threw out the final 10 questions of an 85-question exam. Six years. I can't believe it. They say somehow, now, this is according to Valerie Palmer. She's an attorney representing the police union. They say somehow that those last 10 questions might have been prejudicial towards minorities. 15 people challenged that and said that we answered all the questions and we are minorities and you're harming us by throwing out those last 10 questions. That's a good point. The decision impacts more than 30 Patterson officers and more than 70 Newark officers. So we got 100 cops potentially being affected. And Another quote, hey, we don't know why the last 10 questions were taken away, she said, Allen, the attorney. It's no race bias. And the police union filed an appeal on the basis that the decision was arbitrary and has asked the Civil Service Commission for a stay or at least a pause on the decision until the appellate division can make a ruling on it. And then Allen says that studying for the exams eats up time that they normally would spend with their families. Everybody in this room lost summer studying for it, and it was that much work to put into it. City leaders say that mass demotions would disrupt department logistics, and they could spill over into compromising public safety. And then even the mayor, Andre Saya, weighs in saying that we are standing in solidarity to let everyone know that these promotions must stand. So even the mayor's not on the bandwagon, and the retest is set to happen in late February. So just enough to ruin the holidays for these people. They can be in stress, you know, all during the holidays because they know it's coming up in just a couple months. So Dr. Joel Schultz, what are you reading into this?
I'm going to let Ralph talk first because I'm going to do the rest of the show about this topic.
Is it true, Chief Schultz, that you took the 2019 surgeon's exam?
No, but I will tell you this. Okay, my doctorate's not in criminal justice, it's in education. I spent 10 years as an academy instructor, 20 years in the college classroom, was a subject matter expert with the Colorado Post Curriculum Committee, and was on a subcommittee that designed the final post test. Okay, so I know a little bit about tests and measurements. I can almost guarantee you that this whole test was irrelevant in the first place. If you have, you need to go through a process. If you're really going to have an honest test that has results that are relevant to performance, you've got to do a task analysis and a frequency analysis, and then you write your KSAs, what skills and knowledge that you have to have in order to do the job. Then you write tests that measure whether the training objectives around those objectively certifiable KSAs, that you write the test and then you put those objectives out there and then you test to the objectives. If that was done, which I doubt, if that was done, then the test should be reflecting what the policy and training and education of those test takers were. So if the test somehow reflected a bias that could result in racial disparity, that means that the training and policy was the error, not the testing.
Either way, does the time factor make a difference with any argument?
Oh, absolutely. Particularly when it comes to racial issues, because it has been so politicized and so subjective that culture may have changed, demographics may have changed, attitudes, statutes may have changed. So, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous to say that something that you were tested over 6 months ago or 6 years ago, which was probably irrelevant in the first place, should nullify a person's performance. And by the way, have you been a good supervisor for the last 6 years? That's the real test.
Good point. Yeah.
You know, first of all, I like what the doctor said, number one. Number two, if they put the test together appropriately, that it was based on policy, case law of, say, California. I worked on a test of a sergeant's test, and we had outside people like Dr. Joel come in and help us put a test together. If it is according to what policy is, case law, custody procedures also for the LA County Sheriff's Department, and it's proved, there should be no racial issue about it, as long as it's subject matter to the department. Something went awry here, Joel and Chip, and I think it's shameful that with 100 candidates who took the test, that they could be demoted from lieutenant, like this Troy Allen could be demoted from lieutenant back to officer because that's sergeant's test. I think it's really shameful. And that shows what it tells me, though, audience and members of this panel right now, is a lack of leadership of the Civil Service Commission of New Jersey. Somehow somebody is advocated for this. And how could they injure everybody within this whole framework? It's really a disaster. It's really shameful.
Yeah. If it takes six years to identify this problem and try to fix it, they've got worse problems. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to dig down to the source of that complaint, but
I agree, we
rely so much because we've got to objectify and testify and validate our training and performance, we rely way too much on paper pencil testing throughout the whole training process. There's so much irrelevance and so much subjectivity.
If I could say one more thing, please. I through my years of testing and being part of this, they try to make tests so fair to become unfair. And it's really disturbing what I've seen through my career about testing.
I agree. And, you know, some people are just great test takers. Doesn't mean they're going to be great supervisors. And I know not every promotional opportunity involves supervision, but there needs to be a combination of the two. And, guys, we're coming up on our first commercial break involving Gauls. So, hey, keep your seatbelts on. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know we can get our gear from a lot of different sources. When you throw the online option, it's almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody about what's really important here, and it's about supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And not only that, they do more than that. They walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com, and they're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they've got a radio code that they're giving to you. It's Radio 15. That'll get you 15% off your next purchase until the end of the year, December the 31st. That works with most purchases. So again, Radio 15, type it in when you go to Gauls.com to get 15% off. And they have gift cards. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones for the new Gauls gift card, and they will be your new best friends. You can do all that at Gauls.com. And now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And you know, guys, they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions that help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most hands-on, common-sense approaches that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. And when you go to the website, make sure you watch those amazing videos to learn about the product. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and also retired police chief Ralph Ornelas. And, you know, we've been talking about 100 officers in the New Jersey area that are looking at, well, they're having to retake the sergeant's exam that they took back in 2019, 6 years ago. And if they don't pass it, they're being told that they're going to go back to entry level. They're going to be officers, you know, not detectives, not corporals, not sergeants, or and some of these guys have even got promoted above that. So a little bit of drama that's supposed to happen at the end of February. I'm looking here at some of the commentary, and we've got like Curtis Westbrook, who I think is a new user from Facebook, saying, hey, do you think any civilian input should be considered during the selection of a sergeant, is what he's asking. And my, well, I mean, I know what my immediate response would be, but do you guys want to quickly answer that for him, a civilian input on selections of sergeants? I mean, my immediate go-to would be, you've got to take normally you have to take a test, and I would say, absolutely not. You know, that's something, because civilians aren't going to know what a sergeant's job entails or who's going to make a good sergeant or what and what's required and what's not. So you need to let the police make, it's kind of like a civilian weighing in on what the military does, you know, with the rank structure. But
you know, I mean, the civilians have an input about putting the test together and verifying a list and stuff, but it's the people who are the executives of the organization, who are sworn executives, that decide the list and who they're going to promote. And based on the components of the test, a written and oral appraisal, promotability, or inbox, whatever it is. But it should be the sworn people that have done that job and look at the framework of that test and make sure that Ralph Ornelas meets out the requirements.
Yeah, he's not talking about the test necessarily, though. He's talking about, you know, selections.
That's,
you
know, what I'm talking about. That's what,
but, you know, you had 100 people that passed a test, but you're only going to promote, you know, 10 or 15. You know, you don't have to go down the line. You can step aside, you know, you can step around, like, you know, when you're taking factors in like minority appointments and all that stuff, which I've had to deal with during my 30-year career, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on that because it's not part of the thing. But do you feel any differently, Chief Schultz?
In one sense, maybe having a civilian is kind of like a canary in the coal mine. So it helps having that perspective. I would advocate, you know, a civilian as part of a board for entry level selection for patrol officers, if nothing else, to educate the civilian and to be able to say for optics and PR. So, yeah, we have civilian participation. So, but on the supervisor level, I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of correlation between civilian supervisors. I mean, if you can run a grocery store, can you run a police department? Well, there are places where the Venn diagram will converge, and so there might be some value to that. But I want to know what your resting pulse rate is, Chip.
It's 48.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
48.
For the folks who weren't listening in earlier, we were talking about energy drinks and pulse rate. And I'm like, if I have a pulse, I'm good.
But I'm only 48 because I'm a swimmer. Swimming will get your resting pulse rate down there. So in fact, yeah.
That's awesome. A great question. I think I appreciate you posing that for us.
All right.
We should put that on a SOGS exam.
All right, well, guys, moving along, let's see, we got a couple stories with video components, so we're going to start off with the machete man. We got rumble.com. This is Butter. Machete wielding suspect fatally shot by the Oklahoma City police officers after a failed less lethal attempt, or attempts plural. So it's 2:00 in the morning. Oklahoma City police receive a call about an assault with a deadly weapon, and the suspect is nowhere to be found, and the victim was taken to the hospital with a cut to the hand. Now remember, this is from a machete. Officers get called back out to the area. I guess they get called back out to the area again, and this guy's returned, you know, with a machete. And so the officers see a danger coming their way, according to the article. They try to get the guy that dropped the machete and comply.
Dion, just relax. Just relax. Dion, we just need to talk. Drop the machete, man. Drop the machete.
And they end up shooting him. He goes to the hospital. They pronounce him dead. But they leave a lot of the details out. So if you start watching the video, just the first, it's surveillance, but from the beginning to the first, it's only 26 seconds, but it's surveillance video. There's no sound, but you get to see these guys chasing this guy with the machete. He's not compliant, and they end up kind of cornering him. He's in the front of a vehicle that's backed into a parking place, and he's there, and they, you know, they light him up with less lethal. I wouldn't say that watching the surveillance video and them lighting the guy up, I gotta admit that for me, it almost gave the impression they were kind of like forcing the next step for the guy. You know, he's getting lit up and he charges them. I there were some people who may have an issue with that. But then if the guy escapes and he's got a machete and he hurts an innocent civilian, then that's bad too. So they used less lethal on the suspect. It looked like they had a taser, but they had some kind of a launcher. And it almost looked like when the launcher was hitting, almost looked like pepper balls were hitting because of the smoke that was, you know, hitting next to the guy. But you can see him trying to cut the taser wires with the machete, and then he charges at the cops. And so at the 1 minute and 40 second, that's when they have body cam showing the cops catching up with the guy. Now we got sound at 1:49, less lethal launched. He charges at the cops with the machete, and just we got 5 seconds later at 1:54, they fire shots and he ends up dying. Commentary on that, Chief Ralph.
Yeah, first of all, when we go back to the officer who was basically took the handle, I like the fact that his voice was very calm. He's trying to direct the people to his right and to his left, what he's going to do. He was engaging Dion, the suspect, numerous times, please give up, please give up. And the guy saying, oh, just kill me and stuff. So I like that when you have somebody in charge like that, handling a call, it puts everybody else in a calm manner, addressing a very high-risk situation. They used a taser, but I'm not sure, based on looking at the video numerous times, reviewing it, Chip and Joel, the guy to the lead officer who was calling it to his left, I think he had a 40 caliber or maybe a pepper ball. I'm not sure if he used it based on surveillance camera, but I would have liked to see if they didn't have a 40 caliber. I wish they did have it because that's something else. But once the guy came at them, it's a justified shooting. It's a justified. Yeah. But I like the fact they escalated things in appropriate manner in my eyes.
Yeah, agreed. Good communication. So, guys, we're coming up on our second commercial break. So, and just in time because there's not enough time for Chief Schultz to talk. Hey. Hold that thought. We'll be right back, guys. All right, guys. Introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision, they demand perfection because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. You can visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. They have tier 1, 2, and 3 rifles. And, you know, since 1994, they've been quietly leading the air builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4, E1 Pro, and Mod 4 handguards. They hit the market last year at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence. And they're now being tailored for the civilian customer. And that means that now you guys can start getting your hands on some of the Primo stuff and their AR 308, it's the M5. It's nothing short of spectacular. So don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and also another retired police chief in California, Ralph Ornelas. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. We've just been talking about Machete Man, not the guy from the movie. You know who I'm talking about, the Mexican-looking dude. Man, he's got that stone cold face, tattoos. It's like one of these dudes. Like, look, if I gotta fight, I'm either gonna shoot this guy. I'm not gonna fight this dude. I'm not going hands on with that guy. He's just like a modern badass in all these movies, right? And so he was in that movie Machete Man. But anyway, we talked about our own version of Machete Man. Any more commentary on that use of force before we move on, Dr. Schultz? Do you have something you want to throw in?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First of all of the signs were there. You could articulate the first of all, you got the report, and then you've got he's clearly armed. He's clear body language. Is verbalizing his suicidal intent. He's there's background. There are people there that are at risk. Like many experts have pointed out, it's when you see a camera replay of something. There's some automatic distortions there about distance, but you've got some challenges about availability of concealment and cover out there in this street scene. Now, if I counted right, there were 3 officers there. 2 of them had less lethal. There were 4 officers. 2 of them had less lethal. And you know my position on this, Chief. And again, I mean, Chip, this may vary, you know, with other people, but you know, they always say, oh, if you're going to use less lethal, you should have 1 lethal. And I'm kind of a 2-to-1 guy. So I think maybe one of those less lethal officers, if there were 4 there and 2 had deadly available or lethal available, then that's, that makes me feel a little bit better. But here again, we have these less lethal versus knife, and not just knife, but machete. So I just worry about our reliance on some of these things. We obviously need to try to preserve life, even crazy life and criminal life. But when you've got that many people at risk, not just the officers, but the third party civilians at risk, I worry about the ratio of lethal to non-lethal. So again, happy ending, not happy for the bad guy, obviously, but nobody that didn't need to be hurt got hurt.
You know, if I may, you was 4 officers, 2 had less than lethal, and then 2 had, you know, their sidearm. And that's what I mentioned when I mentioned to you and Chip in the audience that the person with the rifle, I'm not sure if that was a 40 caliber or a pepper ball. And yeah. I'm not sure, Chip, if he used it or not.
And so I saw the mist, though. I saw the powder that Chip was talking about.
But that might have been from the 9mm also. So we don't know that. But the thing about it is, I think, first of all, the guy has already assaulted somebody. So we got a felony person. But I agree with Dr. Joel is that reverence for life always costs come into play. You would always try to save lives. And I'm glad the person with the taser used it. But unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't function. It doesn't work.
Yeah, well, and but the same with firearms, and that, and that's why I see what the smoke stuff that I was seeing. It was before they used lethal, because the guy wasn't a lethal threat yet. He was back against the car.
Okay.
He was doing the dance when the taser wire. Well, you know how those taser wires are. They, even if you don't have a good hit, if the wire brushes against your arm, like when you're a cop grabbing a bad guy, you know, it'll light you up. But that's at the point when that went on. But I have seen, I mean, sometimes weapons malfunction. And so, yeah, when you got a guy charging, it's like, I don't like carrying only one gun when I was a cop. In fact, against policy, I carried a backup weapon because I got in a predicament with a Signal 6 and escaped prisoner where it almost cost me my life because I only had one gun and we were fighting over the one gun that I had. So having two guns, because, you know, you got a guy charging you a machete and you got a malfunction, you know, and now you got to, let's just say it's a double feed and not a stove pipe. And it's going to take a little bit more time to clear. You don't have that kind of time, you know? So I get the way and the odds and in your favor of having at least two lethal there, just in case, you know,
and the transition time between, you know, getting your taser holstered, you probably ought to drop the thing or throw it away, but it's a couple $1,000s your department's going to be fussing at you about. So, you know, you got to holster it right. And then you got to reorient and draw and fire. And those are precious seconds.
You know, going back and reviewing that lead officer gives me much more confidence. I believe he set the tone about patience before they went to deadly force. And I think probably he really coordinated with the person to his right, the taser, and then the person to his left in the middle was the pepper ball, and the other person had the deadly force too. So I that gives you a lot of confidence as somebody took a handle of the situation and command presence. But I'll leave you on this note. I had a friend of mine back in 79, a guy was 200 yards away, closed the distance with a buck knife. The deputy didn't do the job he should have, cut him from here all the way down to his stomach. So the point is this, when you have somebody with a knife could close a distance, you got to be ready in the right time and place to take a life when it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, let me say a couple of things, Ralph. I absolutely agree with you with the demeanor and the vocalization from the primary officer. I think he did a great job calling the name, trying to personalize it, still keeping deadly force in play. And, you know, we often hear commentators, myself included, too much talking, right? But also, I hope they're not relying on this 21-foot rule that has been so abused and misunderstood. And I think it may have got your friend nearly killed.
Yeah.
Oh, he did. It did.
Well, guys, good commentary. We got this next one, rumble.com. This is Butter again. Man fatally shot. We're jumping to Seattle. Fatally shot by Seattle police officers when he points a gun at officers.
And he got a gun. He got a gun in his hand, and he just pointed at everybody that drive by.
Drop it!
In Seattle, like I said, a man was shot and killed by Seattle police. Now, this is at 1:30 in the middle of the afternoon. Police respond to reports of a shirtless guy waving a gun near a school. Now, investigators say that this guy, he did not comply with cops when they approached him. He started walking towards the officers, and then it prompted them to open fire. Now, Ralph will get excited because we do have a 40-millimeter launcher here. So after the man was shot, police used a 40-millimeter to disarm him, knocking the gun out of his hand. But he still, it says he didn't survive. But that was, I don't usually, we don't usually see that. And you know, we're talking about it is, I guess, the Salish Sea Elementary School. They were put on lockdown during the incident, and police say that a passerby was injured by shards of glass or maybe even bullet fragments, and they're expected to recover. Going back to my notes on this, we've got from the 16-second mark to the 22-second mark. So for 6 seconds, we got a surveillance video showing our bad guy walking down the sidewalk, and he's pointing a firearm at people that are near the school. The guy's losing, right? And then next, we're watching a dash cam from a responding police car at the 23-second mark, and police are responding to the location. They confront this guy who's walking towards them, and then, of course, shots are fired seconds later at 39 seconds, and the gunman ends up being killed. And you can see he points the gun at the officers at 43 seconds, and he's already down, though. And if you keep watching the body cam footage, at 53 seconds, our police are shooting the suspect with the rifle multiple times. And the shots start at 1 minute and 7 seconds. So, and cops having long guns, I absolutely love it. That we, the more cops that have long guns, the better. Chief Ralph.
No, I believe that, number one, the safety of the school nearby had to go on lockdown. He's pointing a gun at people. That's a threat. Regarding the officers that drove up first, you know, they engaged him, they see it, and they shoot. Now, the 40 caliber came in after the fact, because I could see in the video, as I reviewed it numerous times, he's coming after the fact. But, you know, guess what? It's still a justified shooting. Should have the a 40 caliber, are they going to wait? I don't think so. There's no way they're going to wait for the 40 caliber to get there. But, you know, in the use of the 40 caliber, not the gun out of hand, guess what? I think they wanted to do it before they approached him. Was he still moving around when he was on the ground? Hey, listen, you got to adapt and overcome sometimes in situations.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was. He's on the ground, had that gun, and they didn't want to go up on him just in case. And I thought it was pretty creative thinking. Chief Schultz?
I'm just glad it was a good, clean, obviously justified shoot. Otherwise, these officers would be in jail in Seattle. I like the use of the Southern Patrol rifle.
So true. So true.
Yeah. Yeah. There are two things about repetition. One is, you know, I know probably Brett would say stop talking and start shooting, right? But sometimes these repeated commands are to get through the soft skull of a doped up, you know, person in crisis. And so you do have to repeat. And part of it's theater for the camera so that we can say later, look, I gave him 18 warnings to drop the gun and he didn't do it. And the other thing is, once again, we see this so often, a guy's been shot, he goes down and he keeps shooting. Keep pulling the trigger until he's not pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
Good point. Well, you got 10 seconds, Chief Ralph.
I was going to say something. That's what I was going to say, but it's okay.
All right, we're going to hold that thought then, guys. Hey, we're coming up on our third commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a certified, safe, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. And again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and also retired police chief Ralph Ornelas. And Chief Ralph, I know you're getting ready to talk. If you could just kind of refresh our listening audience about the topic you're talking about. And I know you're getting ready to weigh in on that. So I'm sorry that Dr. Schultz took up so much of the airtime that you didn't have a chance to get in before the last commercial break.
You've got a mute button, Chip. I know you do.
No, actually, no, I have nothing else to contribute to the Seattle shooting. I think Dr. Joel and I kind of covered most of the issues in regards to as a training issue or a tactics issue. I think it was a justified shooting. But again, I agree with Dr. Schultz, though, reverence for life. You mean you have to think about that in any time, any place, you know, you're engaging young officers. You have to think about that. Why? Because of ramifications of a potential wrongful death suit.
Agreed. Especially there.
I will say this, and I don't know if I've said it on the air on this show before or not, but, you know, the police officer's survival. I think I talked about it when Scott was on. That's a high ethical framework, is our own survival, not necessarily at the cost of somebody else's, because we've got to be ready to lay our life on the line, but to become another victim, be dropped out of the fight, not be able to continue the mission, to expose our radio and weapon systems to somebody else if we're down and disabled, to distract other responders. So it's not a selfish thing. You know, critical civilians will often say, well, all you have to do is say, I was afraid for my life, and therefore that's not true. You have to have an objectively reasonable expectation of death or serious bodily harm. But for me to stay alive in a situation is the best way that I can serve potential victims or victims of crime. So we are obligated to have a reverence for life. And I think, you know, we all agree on that. But we're not obligated to optionally sacrifice our safety or life in a mission.
That's a good point.
No, I'm not saying that, Dr. Joel, at all.
I know we absolutely agree on that ethic.
But something I just remembered, Chip and Joel, what I wanted to say to Joel is I always teach young officers, they have to be the Steven Spielbergs of this video, because what's going on in an incident, because especially body worn cameras and all the different CCTV out there and stuff, what that officer did in the previous shooting, which was in, which one was that? It was in the machete. I like the fact that officer took command of the situation, and he orchestrated the incident as best as possible, what was in front of him. And that's difficult because, number one, you control fear, emotion, and everybody. Listen, if any officer says he's not fearful, they're full of baloney. Everybody gets fearful, but it's how you control that fear during a very high-risk incident.
Well, thanks, guys.
I've worked – I know you want to move on, Chip. I've worked with combat veterans, and – what the pattern that I've seen is they may get excited on the radio, but when things are really hitting the fan, you'll hear them slow down in their tone. And, when they're under fire or there's some really pressing things going on, they slip into this, zone where they are completely controlling themselves. And, it's really remarkable to see. And I love to see veteran officers, when everybody else would be screaming and running, their tone is even keel, and they're ready to meet the mission.
Correct.
Agreed. Well, guys, let me jump to globalordnancenews.com. We're not going to have time for commentary on this, but I do want to cover it, and we'll go to a story of the video component that we just have enough time to cover the video. But we got more than 130 Philadelphia police drug cases are going to be vacated after a judge finds three officers' testimonies are unreliable. So it's 130 drug cases right now, and they were dismissed on Friday. Hundreds more are expected to collapse in the coming months. Prosecutors say that three Philadelphia narcotics officers repeatedly gave false testimony in court. The judges, Lillian Ransom, vacated 134 cases during the first in a series of hearings, and it's nearly 1,000 criminal prosecutions are collapsing, according to the article, because of this. It was the narcotics strike force has been deemed, or these three officers with that strike force have been deemed unreliable, according to the article. And so, again, Philadelphia police, it's got the officers' names in the article that are allegedly giving false testimony. It says that they had recovered video footage that contradicted what the statements were being made by some of the officers. They interviewed one of the officers who said that he was surprised to hear that. The other officers didn't give commentary. So that's going on. There's also an active IA investigation going on in reference to that as well. jumping over to this last story with a video component, rumble.com. This is Butters, the channel. Wrongful death lawsuit filed against the Fort Wayne Police Department after the fatal shooting of a woman. She had two knives.
Patricia? Patricia? Oh, hold on now. Patricia? One-ten, why don't you start me another U-85? Patricia? This is the Point Police Department, are you okay?
Controversial. People are complaining about the way this was done. Again, Fort Wayne, they released this edited body cam footage. It's a January standoff. Officer shot and killed a 66-year-old Fort Wayne woman. The officers were called to the Parkview Studios January the 8th. They're helping out the Indiana State Patrol parole officers with a barricaded subject. And the woman later identified as Patricia Hepworth. She had a felony parole violation warrant, and she was armed with a knife inside the apartment. And after police attempted to contact her in the de-escalate, they say that Officer Michael Carrier and Officer Spencer Munger fired shots, striking and killing her. Now, Hepworth's son filed a wrongful death lawsuit in July against the city of Fort Wayne and Officer Carrier, Officer Bagels, and Officer Munger. The lawsuit states that their actions were reckless, willful, and deliberately indifferent to her rights. The lawsuit also alleges that Hepworth was having a mental health crisis at the time. I don't know. I mean, everybody thinks that makes, you know, a huge difference, but she was armed with a knife inside her bathroom and was bleeding from her wrist. Despite the Fort Wayne's claims that Hepworth had barricaded herself, her door was open. Officers threw a flashbang in her room, causing her to stagger out of the apartment. Usually they're caused disorientation. She's rubbing her eyes, holding the knife. Officer Michael Carrier, according to the article, shoots her three times in the chest using an assault rifle at close range. Officers did not direct her, according to the surviving son, I guess, and not director of the stop or the drop the knife, issuing no warnings until after she was shot, provided no life-saving measures afterwards. Officer Carrier had a meaningful opportunity to detain her without the use of deadly force, according to the suit. Attorneys representing the defendants in the lawsuit denied any wrongdoing in their responses that the officers could not confirm or deny that she was having a mental health issue, and that they did deny several other claims in the lawsuit, including that she was shot three times at close range and that officers did not issue warnings before shooting her and that officers provided no life-saving measures. So there you go. Dr. Schultz,
two minutes. It's one of these nightmare things that we've seen so often where a screaming Mimi comes out with, you know, flashing knives, and it's just a nightmare scenario. My question is, okay, Mayor Mondami, when you start sending social workers to welfare checks and domestic violence, how would they handle this with a four-year degree in social work?
Yeah. You know, they said a flashbang. It looked to me like a gas canister. And we have four cops, and this is at the end, you know, when they backed out initially, but when they go back, they have two rifles, they have a ballistic shield, and one of the guys had gas that was deployed. I really don't think that it was a flashbang. That's more of a SWAT tool on making entries and disorienting, you know, your people and stuff. I could be wrong, but it looked like gas to me. And it looked like they were equipped for gas. You're Chief Ralph, we got a minute and 5 seconds. Any commentary on this one?
You know, I mean, it's a tactical situation in a way because it's contained in a home. So self-barricaded. Could they slow things down a little bit, maybe close the door and, you know, maybe bring crisis negotiations, throw a phone in. I mean, try to do certain things to mitigate a wrongful death. I mean, sometimes you know it's going to go in this direction, but do as much tactically as you can to mitigate that. And again, I have a funny feeling you're right, Chip, that was not a flashbang. I've used flashbangs doing entries. It totally disorients you completely. And that, if they did use a flashbang and had the entry team, you know, from the police department go in Fort Wayne and the parole people behind them, they might have taken this person down if the flashbang was effective. But I got to tell you, one of the things is you got to slow the, you got to slow things down a little bit and take a tactical approach.
You know, hey, gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show, Chief Joel Schultz and Ralph Ornelas. We appreciate it. And that reminds me of there's 130 missing flashbangs from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. I just remembered that story that popped up. But we'll talk off. Don't worry. We'll talk off camera about the rest of that, Chief Ornelas. But well, how cool would that be? I'm sure we can work out something if you have an extra one. But hey, I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. And guys, Chief Schultz is it's the email address to get your books, Chief, is schultzco@gmail.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. No C's, no Z's in Schultz. S-H-U-L-T-S-C-O at Gmail.
And guys, our sponsors, Gulls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com. We have Gunlearn, My Medicare, Safeguard Recruiting, and TwoBells.com. Also, FisherOrlandoBass.com with Zach. Thanks for the support. We'll see you guys back Monday, 12 noon Eastern.